VentureCast.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a wheel. Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a wheel like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
I want to get back to this. What is the mission of the band?
Right.
The problem Fish has is Americans don't have an appetite for whimsy in the way that other
people. That's the problem. You're going to blame America. Okay, I like this. Good take. You're right. Americans are too, both of you guys, Americans are too lazy to like Fish. Okay,
no, that's
the problem.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. Shut up. I'm saying that.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
Zoom screen. This is so
exciting.
It's Zoom exciting. We've got Jeff Simons in Berkeley. We've got Ben Barton in Knoxville, Tennessee. And in the central square from Vermont, from the Age Old Question podcast, Clinton Rich. How are you guys?
Hey. It's so good to be back with the 50 years, guys.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Looking into the future, the age-old guys.
Yeah, it's like, wow, this is what it's like. Take a good
hard look. It gets worse and worse, doesn't it?
How dare you?
Take a good hard look at this ceiling, because that's what's coming for you. Now, I am so excited that the two of you are joining us tonight. This is the podcast I've probably done the most research on in the last 2.5 years. I am so prepared to talk tonight about jug bands. I'm really excited. I dug deep.
Hey, oh.
What? It's
That's
not jug.
It's name three jug bands. Go.
Uncle Irwin's. No,
there's
I
Emmett
can't.
Otter's jug band from Muppet Christmas. That's a
oh no
one.
No dude, and then there's the one from Disney World.
Yeah,
the
Country Bear Jamboree.
Yes.
And then there's Mother McCree's jug band, which became the Grateful Dead. Boom.
Oh,
it's a jug
wow.
band podcast.
It's a jug band podcast. It's actually.
By the way, the Fat Bear sucks. I hate the Fat Bear.
At the Country Bear Jamboree.
Oh, yeah. The worst.
That thing,
can't play
by the
at
way,
all.
Can you believe they used to actually have that attraction? Like, it was just like redneck bears drunk off their ass making like 1960s Flintstones jokes in like animatronic, and we were just fed that narrative like, here kids, sit down, we'll explain adult life to you. The dad's drunk, the mom's long suffering. It's like if the Berenstain Bears had no money. That was the Country Bear Jamboree
for sure. Dude, there's still a bear jamboree right here at the Smokies, and there's what used to be called the Dixie Stampede.
Oh boy.
Renamed Stampede. I'm not kidding. They got rid of Dixie, and I was like, okay, fair.
So both Ben Barton, Jeff Simons coming in hot tonight, ready to discuss jam bands. This is the second in our New England podcast trilogy. That's why we've called in Clint and Rich, our New England experts, as it were, especially for that little northwest corner of New England. But before we get to that, here on 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys on the Electricast Podcast Network, we got to talk about our Spotify Wrapped musical selections. Top three. Let's go with our third place finisher, Jeff Simons. What was your third place finisher?
You're going to start to see a theme very quickly, but number three for me was Megan Slankard.
Yeah. Any particular song? Or are you just doing the artist?
I just did the artists.
I did the songs. That's okay. Rich?
My number three was Vulture Choir by Brothers Landreth.
Oh, nice.
Do you guys know that song?
No, it's good.
Oh, Brothers Landreth is a Canadian band duo.
Are they related to Sonny Landreth, the old slide guitar player? Are they his kids?
He is a slide guitar player.
Yeah. I saw Sonny Landreth two or three times open for Richard Thompson. If that's his kids, the dad was a killer player.
Joey Landreth is the guitarist and lead singer, and he is a monster slide guitar player.
Cool. Brothers Landreth.
Yeah.
And their vibey is all get
super
out.
Super vibey. Super vibey. Vibey.
Old
and sounding. Vulture Choir is a great, great song.
Taking notes.
All right, Ben Barton.
All right, so I'm just going to just spill it all here. My number one song.
What? You're not going to want to go in order?
No, I'm just going to do it. It'll be quicker this way. My number one song is As Every Year, In a Silent Way by Miles Davis. That's my Shavasana song for yoga. So that's the most listened song every single year. My top artists. TV on the Radio 5, Brandi Carlile 4, Jack White 3, J. Cole 2, Zach Bryan coming in at number one.
Wow.
J. Cole.
It was getting ready for Bonnaroo, and then afterwards, I just got super into Zach Bryan this year.
All right.
All right, Clint.
All right. I have to start by saying that my Spotify is very skewed because I have a 10-year-old who doesn't have a phone. And so every time I get in the car, I hand him the phone. And so the number three is Circles by Post Malone.
Oh, nice. I love that one.
Love that song. That. Love that song.
And you and your 10-year-old can share in that love.
Yes, big time.
Awesome. Awesome.
I think Ben's right. I'm just going to do the rest of mine. So number two was Brad Brooks. And number one was me.
Let's go, Jeff Simons.
I only use my Spotify for when I'm playing a gig. So when I have to relearn all of Megan's songs, she's number three. I played for Brad Brooks twice this year. He was number two. And panically trying to learn my own songs to perform them, I was number one. Interestingly, I was in the top 1% of Jeff Simon's listeners, according to Spotify, which made me feel pretty good.
That's great.
You got a big, big fan there in Berkeley. I love it.
I do.
All right. I've got Exit Music by Radiohead coming in number three. Rich Price?
I've got, for my number two, Use Me by Bill Withers.
Oh, good one. That's a great
cool.
one.
Cool. Excellent. Clint?
My number two was Twiddle. And again, my son's favorite band, and I produced their record. So I did a lot of listening of that record when it got on Spotify just to
I'll bet you did.
Judge myself.
Nice.
But
Twiddle.
I think the song, I can't find where it is, but I'm pretty sure it was Every Last Leaf 2 was the number two song.
Okay.
All right.
I remember that at one point. I can't find it though.
My number two, Ben Barton, you inspired me this year to make a running playlist. I did that. It was great. And you're right. Like, it's so funny what gets skipped over and then cut off the running list. Like, I hear it twice. I'm like, well, I'm done with that song. But you know what stayed? All Too Well, 10-minute version. Because after the song's done, you've been running for 10 minutes.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to love Fish then, my man. I've got your next marathon playlist pre-selected.
Three songs.
Tim, my number one is related to yours. I listen, when I'm on the treadmill, I listen to an artist. Ben and Jeff may not be able to hear this, but I listen to an artist named Andy Grammer. He's got a song, Don't Give Up, and I crank the treadmill up and I think, don't give up. I'm not going to give up.
Oh my God, dude. First of all, I know Andy Grammer and I know that song, and nothing makes you quit sooner than hearing the first notes of that song. As soon as he starts, I'm like, oh, giving up, Andy.
It's better than Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush's Don't Give Up. That would not keep you running.
That no. would be sad.
But there's something about Andy Grammer's radical optimism and positivity that actually works for me on the treadmill.
I like it. I like it.
Awesome. All right. Clint, what came in first for you this year?
I can't find it, but I don't know. I can't find the list. I just read it like a couple days ago, though. I want to say it was, it might have been, this is crazy, but it might have been Justin Bieber.
Huh.
I mean, it's not my Spotify. I would say it's like, I use Spotify entirely to learn songs as well.
And trying to distance yourself away.
But I do love some Bieber. I'll take some Bieber.
Yeah.
But that was, I think that was number one, because I remember looking at it and be like, ooh, what? How did, what? But we're talking hours in the car.
And then you embraced it as well. Yeah. To show you how hip I am at the age of 52, my number one most played song of the year was Blue by the Jayhawks.
You had a tough year, man. Exit music, Blue.
Yeah.
I know. The exit music was not Jeremy.
All right. Well, we got to move on.
Keep breathing. That was your lyric of 2022.
Keep breathing. Clinton and Rich, I don't know if you've listened to season 3 at all.
Oh, yeah. Because the travelogue?
Yeah, the travelogue. The musical road trip we're on. What we do when we get to a certain location is we pick an arrival song. And for New England, excluding Boston, or heck, tonight, including Boston, it just so happens that the same group has our arrival song, our favorite Sons of the Area song, and our pick for our favorite band from New England. It is your band, The Sweet Remains.
We didn't know.
It's been a while. You still got the same smile that stops me in my tracks. And you're wearing your hair running away. It's not my taste, but you're beautiful anyway. I think I'm writing a love song for you. Sing it out, even if you walk away.
I think I'm don't want to get sued by the songwriters.
Yeah, those bastards will come after us. The Sweet Remains. Excellent stuff. Rich Price, how long have you guys been together now?
We have been together 15 years. We just played it at the Bowery Ballroom a couple nights ago, and we had a photo taken in the same spot.
I love it. So great.
Just like the Beatles in 70, right?
Exactly. We've aged a little bit more than the Beatles in that photo, but we decided that we're going to go back in 15 years, although we'll be slightly depressed if we're still playing the Bowery Ballroom in 15 years. But
come on, don't say that. It'll be
fantastic. Yeah. Yeah.
Playing the Bowery.
No,
it's great.
You'd be depressed if you're playing like a bar mitzvah. Yeah, just keep it quick.
Yeah, exactly. No, but we're having fun still, and we are geographically challenged. I live here in Burlington, Vermont. Brian lives in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, wow.
And Greg lives in Connecticut. So, but we record most of our albums here in Vermont. So it is definitely a New England band. And Clint is helping us record the new songs from the new record, and Clint
Sweet.
Has played on, I think, on every single one of our records, and Jeff's played on a bunch of them as well.
I thought the bass on that last song was particularly notable. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to sit in with this band maybe half a dozen times. The last time they swung through California, I got to to jump up for a bunch of tunes. And it's a musical bunch, man. It is just harmonies everywhere you look. I love they have a thing where they sing all around a what kind of, is that a ribbon mic that you sing around, or what's it called?
Diaphragm condenser.
Large diaphragm. But it's right out of it's right out of the 1930s Louisiana hayride. It's just awesome. They all like get around it super close and pull off those three-part harmonies.
Awesome.
It's terrific.
And Timmy and I are independent parties. We have no skin in this game, and I can just say I just absolutely love The Sweet Remains. Such a huge fan.
Woo!
One of the things that I really, really, really appreciate about the band is like basically in this general genre of folk slash rock, there's some areas that are overmined. Like, so for example, the band. Like there's a lot of new bands that can't play, and they're like, you know what we should sound like is the band. And then you get another band record of guys who can't play. This particular vein, though, like the CSN, like the beautiful harmonies, really like delicate filigreed songwriting, is hardly veined at all. Like you guys are just mining in virgin territory, and it's fantastic. And part of the reason why is it's really hard.
Yes.
Really, really hard. Like you need to be able to really sing and really, really write to create the stuff that The Sweet Remains do. So I'm just a huge fan.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. And you know, one of the great things about being in this band for me is to be in a band with two other songwriters and to carry the load with of the lead, you know, lead vocals, but also they're two of my favorite songwriters. And so I geek out as a fan of these guys. But it's also creates some challenges for us as we're experiencing right now in the studio. And Clint, I think if he had hair, he'd be pulling it out because it's the songs are so disparate, and we're having a hard time figuring out what is the sound of this record, because my songs sound very different from the songs that the other guys are writing. So
I want to recommend that you try to sound like the band. That seems like
that's a really good idea.
Good thing you got a producer there.
I love that you disclosed where both you and Brian live, but Greg lives somewhere in Connecticut. I thought that was a nice touch. Greg would prefer I don't disclose his exact location.
He often actually says he lives in the tri-state area.
The tri-state area. All right. Well, enough. Enough praise, enough compliments. I know what this podcast is really going to be about.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
It's going to be about some testy individuals bringing their strong opinions to the floor. We are talking about jam bands. And I wanted to start by giving you Rolling Stone's reader poll of the top 10 jam bands.
Great.
Number 10 is Mo. Number 9, I'm going to skip because I want your opinion in a little bit. Number eight is Umphrey's McGee. Number 7 is Government Mule. Number 6 is Widespread Panic. I expected them in our list. Dave Matthews Band comes in at 5. I'm going to skip number 4. Fish is number 3. The Allman Brothers, number 2. The Grateful Dead, number 1. Any issues with the names of the bands I have listed there?
I don't think the Dead or the Allman Brothers are jam bands because they predate the whole idea. and it's a lazy lumping. I think if you could call the Allman Brothers when they came back in 89 and kind of reinvented themselves to fit in with that younger generation, that second, like Allman Brothers Band 2.0, I think, is a jam band, but the original band isn't. And the Dead are their own thing. But other than that, I think those are all jam bands. Yeah.
So I think the Dead are the prototypical jam band, and I think that's super fair. I mean, there's bootlegs from 72 where they've got 10-minute, 15-minute songs.
It's not about that, though. I mean, fine. I don't want to quibble. Yes, the Dead are a jam band. And if they are, then they belong at number one.
Okay. Wow.
We're going to fight so much. I'm not starting there. Like
so amenable. Well, Rolling Stone had a pretty strict definition. A lot of readers put Pearl Jam and they said no. A lot of readers put Led Zeppelin and they acknowledged Led Zeppelin had very long songs, but at some point they just started doing a set list. But number nine was Pink Floyd.
No, absolutely not. Mm-mm. Boo.
Boo to
Rolling
Stone.
They did the same exact thing every night and they did their albums in sequential order. On the 77 tour, they did Animals, took a set break, and then the Dark Side, and then did Wish We Were Here. That was the show. Like, there couldn't be anything less jam bandy than that.
And what about number four, Cream?
No. No.
I'm with Jeff on that. No. And also, they're Cream's annoying that. And bad. So.
What is Rolling Stone's definition of jam bands?
So, you have to have a long, improvised guitar solos and jams, for lack of a better word, and they were really highlighting the improvisation, that it's going to be different every night.
Except it was 12 bar blues for an hour and 10 minutes until they cut the power. It wasn't like they were writing and inventing new. It was like, you know what would make rolling and tumbling better is if it rolled and tumbled for 27 minutes. I mean, that Cream is not a no
you're out. What about
well, that's certainly what the Grateful Dead did.
I was surprised.
Although you could argue Dark Star is like really inventing music on the fly, right? And coming up with new weird stuff. Playing in the band would last 40
seconds. I mean, they were
yeah.
Improvising. I would say
that also another definition of jam band that has come out of maybe the more modern quote unquote era of jam bands is the ability to play multiple genres. I think that's a big part of jam band, is that like there's a lot of bluegrassy styled quote unquote jam bands now, like Cabinet, Green Sky Bluegrass, that are lumped into this genre of jam band. But I think like bands like Fish, they'll play funk, they'll play bluegrass, they'll play jazz, straight ahead jazz, they'll play, you know, I think that's another element in addition to the improvisation. It's the breadth of what they're doing night after night, in addition to never doing the same show twice.
All right, and real quick, thoughts on who didn't make it. The Black Crowes and their, you know, the bands that came after them, the Swiss Brothers Robinson and everything like that.
Yeah, I don't think they're jam bands.
I don't either.
I think they jam. I think there's a difference between bands that jam and jam bands.
Like, it might be that difference is bands that annoy Ben are jam bands, and bands that don't quite qualify. Because every band we cut, I can see Ben's like, "Oh, I kind of like those guys," and we're like, "No, they don't belong." And he's like, "Fine with me." We're
just sharpening the knife.
It's funny. All right. Well, it was Jerry Garcia who said, "What they offer is like licorice, and a lot of people don't like licorice." But people who like licorice really like licorice.
And then he said, "Where am I, man?"
No, and then he said, "You know what's funny? It's a nice breeze on my yacht. I feel it's like you liking it?"
Actually, more likely, he was like me, "I really like licorice. I ate this whole bag." That's probably what he said next.
Oh, boy. All right. We've got Vermont's most successful band, Fish, going on trial here. And what they're going on trial for is whether or not they are listenable Ben Barton, you hold that they are not listenable. Jeff, Clint, you hold that they are quite listenable. Rich, you're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, well, I'll weigh in shortly on this.
Okay. All right. Well, I will be
the literal sound of equivocation. Well,
I greatly respect and appreciate Fish. I don't choose to listen to them, but I've been exposed to them through living in Vermont, through playing with those guys.
Okay.
I was not the class clown, but I sat next to him and I studied him. I appreciated his humor.
All right.
Exactly right.
All right. This court will come to order. Opening argument. You have 1 minute just to state your case, Clint.
1 minute. All right. Fish is a live band, and Fish gives you what you put into the band. In that way, Fish is it's not for the every Joe Schmo listener, right? The more you dig into their catalog, the more you get. Meaning, they have, starting from 1983, have written these through-composed songs that started their career that are just epic tunes. And in addition to creating an entire world called Gamehenge and The Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday. So if you start in that realm and you do the work because you're digging into a 10-minute through-composed, very progressive rock song, once you dig into that and you know every nuance of that, once you get later in their career and they start writing poppier songs, quote-unquote, with verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, chorus, the appreciation doubles. So I consider Fish the more you give, the more you get kind of band. And I don't think there are a lot of bands like that out there.
Thank you very much. Defense that Fish is actually unlistenable. Go ahead, Ben Barton.
So I'm not going to be a minute. I'm going to be more than a minute. So the first thing I'll note for the ladies and gentlemen of the jury is that I'm not a drive-by on this situation. I've seen Fish multiple times, starting in 1990. And I've seen them at Bonnaroo. On that list of bands, the list of jam bands, I saw the Allman Brothers, but after Duane was dead, obviously. And I saw like some portion. I think I saw Roger Waters for part of whatever he did at Bonnaroo. I've seen all of these acts at Bonnaroo. I have given jam bands the college try and then some. I saw the Grateful Dead as the Grateful Dead and all the various different parts of the Grateful Dead. So I do not have, in my opinion, an unintelligent or unlearned opinion about these bands. I've given them the college try. And Jeff sent Tim and I a 10-song Fish mix, which I listened through without skipping all the way through.
Wow.
Which actually, sadly, hardened my opinion and then some on Fish. I don't understand the mission of Fish. I just don't get it. The songs, the lyrics are dumb. The songs are like interesting. Like it's definitely composed. I understand that it's composed music, but I don't understand what exactly that I'm supposed to get out of it. There is like a sheer musicianship to it, but that goes a short distance for me because it's purposeless. It goes nowhere. There's no reason for it. And actually, I had been under the impression, I believe last time, and one of the things that makes me laugh about this is another relitigation podcast. Like, this is the third time I've had to trash Fish. But I'm more than happy to do it on Expanse. On re-listen, my original opinion was that they were all fantastic at playing their instruments, and in particular, Trey was a really tremendous guitarist. On re-listen, I was like, no. There's so many boring solos. There's so many boring guitar parts, just brutal, where he's like, there are guitar solos where having taken guitar lessons and tried to get better, they give you these like finger exercises where you're just playing it over and over again. There's like two, 3 minute solos that are just scales and finger exercises, just not interesting at all. Insofar as this music reflects jazz and funk, I don't understand why they're not getting more shit. Like, it's a super white bread version of that music. They're completely like occupying that space and watering it down for dumb people who can't listen to the original versions of it. Like, just like that Dutch music I like. Like, I really like jazz music and I really like funk music. And this version of it is so white bread Vermont. Like, I just really, really strongly object to it. And also, like, there aren't there's like, I can count on a couple of hands. I don't even need all my hands and fingers and toes to count the number of 17-minute songs that I like. And this is a band that has the fucking, you know, like 350 17-minute songs. Completely unacceptable, boring as hell. I listened to Jeff's stupid mix. The last song was, I don't know, 15 minutes long. And you know how with Spotify, you finish it, they start another song? I went another 20 minutes before I noticed. I was like, wait, is this still that same shitty song? And I went back and I was like, oh no! I listened to Extra Fish by mistake because it was all just interchangeable.
All right. Well, the opening argument, the case, and the closing argument all from the top rope right at the beginning. And by the way, you may have trashed Fish before, but those are just pre-trial hearings. this is the real stuff.
By the way, I know that Drake didn't get its own podcast, so I'm sure that's going to happen. As long as we're relitigating everything, I want my own Drake podcast.
Well, we are. I mean, yeah, we missed our chance with Toronto, I guess, to really go after that. But
go ahead, Jeff Simons.
So here's, I love your question. What is the, I don't understand the mission. And this is what reintroduced the band to me. So I have a up and down with Fish. I really like them. I like them a lot more than Ben did. But Ben and I saw Fish five times together by the end of 1993. And at the end of every show, I was like, boy, I really like that. And he was like, I really got bored by the end of it. Like, and we saw shows where after half an hour, we were both like, it's pretty good. We're both having a good time. And then I continued to have a good time. And Ben's good time wore off considerably. Uh-oh. I remember we saw one of what's considered one of Fish's best shows. We saw the Greek Theater in 1993 at the end of that kind of summer tour where the band took it up a notch. And you and Randy and I went and they finished and Randy turned to us and said, can we go home now? He was so done in by the experience. But it is interesting. So, and then I really liked Fish. They broke up in 2000. I did not like Fish 2.0. I thought they sounded really crappy in 2003, 2004. I was glad for them to take a break. And I didn't think they got the mojo back when they came back until, I thought from 2011 to 2015, I heard some good music. Like, people would tell me, you absolutely have to listen. Our friend Eric Becker, who's probably listening to this.
Sure.
Would say, like, you have to hear this set. And I would agree with him. Like, oh, they're starting to sound like a really good band again. But
I look into the finance boxes to check my status. I look into the microscope. I see Golgi apparatus. Golgi, oh, woe is me. You can't even see the sea. Golgi, 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 Golgi. They call him Liza's own. Cause he runs so fast. Runs like a junkyard dog with a brain of brass.
I want to get back to this. What is the mission of the band?
Right.
The problem Fish has is Americans don't have an appetite for whimsy in the way that other
people. That's the problem. You're going to blame America. Okay, I like this. Good take. You're right. Americans are too, both of you guys, Americans are too lazy to like Fish. Okay.
No,
that's the problem.
Not what I'm saying at all. Shut up. I'm saying that we don't mind when singer-songwriters have a joke song. Like when Rich plays the set, he plays like Break Up, Break Down and everybody's heart's broken. And then he's like, and here's a funny song about something else. And they're like, ah, and they go up and down. We like our rock bands either to be serious or not. We like them to pick a lane and stay in it. We want Radiohead to be a deep, interesting experience. And we want AC/DC to not be a big, deep experience. We want AC/DC to be fun. We want Radiohead to make us think. And we put bands in particular in one of these two categories: Cheap Trick, dumb and fun. AC/DC, dumb and fun. Radiohead and Pearl Jam, deep, serious art. And I'm guilty of it. And my back and forth with Fish is related to my inability at times to balance very serious music with very unserious lyrics. And that was a problem for me as well, right? But they're whimsical. We don't do whimsy in rock bands. You're not allowed to be silly as a rock band unless you're all in silly. And I think that's one of the interesting things about this band is it has definitely serious musical ambitions and a goofy ass sense of humor. Boy, are their lyrics dumb, but so are most rock lyrics. Like a sweet talking mama with a face like a gent, my get up and go must have got up and went is not exactly like, let's all stop and contemplate that. But what Phish is it's Frank Zappa without the indefensible misogyny. It's King Crimson without the deadly seriousness. It's Yes without the embarrassing pretension. It's like if Monty Python became a kick-ass rock band, or if all the guys in the audiovisual club suddenly could shred. And I go back and forth. The turning point for me was, what if I'd stop penalizing Phish for not trying to be Radiohead and appreciate them just for what they are, which is a bizarrely hybridic version of a lot of things I like that don't usually go together, right? And once I jumped that hurdle, I really got back into them again. And the second thing, so interesting that you got bored, because I actually have turned all my favorite Phish moments into long MP3s. I've gone the other way. Like I took like, you know, sets where I like four or five songs in a row. I actually put them together into what is now one like 45 minute MP3. And I'm deliberately experiencing them that way. Because for me, the point is to get lost in it. I also, like a 50-year-old man, exercise to this band. And I mean, when I get it, when I let myself like go into the space where I'm in this band's orbit, I really am enjoying it. And I would say that's the other thing about Phish is it is unusual. Like it's a thing. It's an experience. It's not like any other show that they are weird, but they bring it. They come to entertain. The shortest Phish show you'll see is 2 hours and 20 minutes long, which for people who aren't into it is an eternity. But for people who are into it, it's a really generous night out. They don't gouge on ticket sales. There's a lot of egalitarianism around the band that I also admire. So I think that's the essential question, man. If you don't understand this band's mission, they make no sense whatsoever. And you may decide you don't like the mission, but I've decided like once I forgave them for not being what I expect a rock band to be and started to think about, well, how might I appreciate what they are? Like, The thing has made a lot more sense to me. I have listened to a lot of Phish in the last 2 months. I recommended this podcast, not just because I wanted to talk to Rich and Clint, but because I'm having this weird kind of Phish resurgence and it has taken me by surprise. And I'm kind of into it. Like, I don't find it boring. I don't find it unlistenable. I don't find it. And the things that used to bother me are like, and maybe it's because I'm so familiar with the material now. I could play all these, like I could sit down and play Divided Sky at the piano for you. I could play all of Reba. Like I've listened to these songs now to the point where they're in my, like they're not taking me by surprise with all the twists and turns. And like their length for me is not like I know how they all go. And so like in these songs, like minute eight, when they go to the third theme, I'm like, oh, here comes that third theme I like, which is, you can only have that experience if you've listened. Like, it's like you and In a Silent Way. The first time people listen to In a Silent Way, they're going to be like, that was the sound of people tuning their instruments. The 50th time you listen to it, every little thing makes sense. And I'm not saying that Phish on Every Night is Miles Davis's great 69 band, but there are ways to get lost into the sound of that band where you can anticipate where they're going to go. And when you guess right and they go where you think they're going to go, it's kind of exciting.
I got to send that Spotify playlist you made out to our listeners so that they can weigh in as well as our jury out there. Clint, is it your turn?
Yes, my turn. So I'd say if we're talking straight jam bands, nobody does a jam better than Phish. And this is what I mean. Phish has a way of their entire operation is based on tension and release, right? That's their entire mojo. They spent years practicing tension and release as a four-piece band in a room where no one was listening. And they just did exercises. And what they do when you go see a band that doesn't know how to jam, here's what happens. They play for a little bit and they get excited. They get excited. It peaks and then it drops. And then they play and they get excited. They get excited and it drops. and then again, and it's this rocky roller coaster. What Phish is unbelievably good at is taking you from point A to a crescendo and a point B that is so high, all in the course of whatever, 2 minutes to 16 minutes, but rarely do they drop the floor out until the jam is over. And it's real, real hard to do, to have a group of 21,000 people in a room hanging on every note and waiting for it to get to the crescendo moment. Most bands, I would say all bands other than Phish, can't do that. No other jam band is at the level where they're selling out Madison Square Garden four nights in a row.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know,
who's playing music right now?
I am. There's a little Phish in the background. I thought it was kind of you wanted to hear some, but I'll... You're like, you already hate it. You're like, what is that horrible noise you put on in the background?
You crazy kids.
The thing about Phish is...
In Ben's defense, not every one of the 21,000 people is hanging on every note. There is... Phish is a scene, and it is frequently a scene that irritates the absolute hell out of me. Like, I spent... The last time I saw Phish and I had a good seat, I spent half my time warding off Wookiees trying to stand next to me. Like, yeah, if I leave my wallet and my beer is collateral, can I have your stub? My buddies just need to get down here. I'm just like, dude, go... away. Like, half the show is
you're
dealing
so,
with morons,
so
which
uptight.
I don't
I tell you what
much.
There's a big difference between Phish Live and Phish Records, right?
Okay.
I think they've done, what, 10 records? I don't know how many records
13.
They've done. 13 records.
Yeah.
And starting with Junta, which is that whole through composed madness, you know, Divided Sky, Esther, that era. Once you get past that, there's a lot of like great songs. And what we always talk about in the age old question is, a great song to me is defined by the ability to pick up an acoustic guitar and play that song as one person. And does the song carry without all the other instruments?
Right.
And there are many, many Phish songs that do that for me. And yes, the lyrics are silly. And yes, they jam. But if I were to pick up a guitar and I could play an entire set of acoustic Phish songs that hold the listener. I mean, anyone can. There's enough catchy melodies and there's enough structure there. I mean, Trey's a great songer.
And in fact, that's what we're going to do right now.
Yeah. Look, where's my guitar? Chop, chop.
Wait, good. I have a question for the person in the room who's listened to maybe three Phish songs in his life. Aside from the playlist,
wait,
that
Jimmy, you
me.
Didn't listen to the mix that I had to sit through.
I,
you didn't even
I make
it.
I got through three
he didn't
songs.
Make it. He didn't even come close.
First three
of all,
songs.
I'm gonna can you. Like you're out. You can't.
Wait, what's on that mix?
I had to sit through them all. You got to sit through them all.
I have to be an impartial judge here. But here's my question: you guys,
the impartial judge, by the way, wrote the words "gouge my ears out."
No, and also you're gonna be more impartial by listening less. You should have had to listen to the whole thing.
So my question is, you guys keep talking about silly lyrics. Can anyone give me an example of a lyric that's bad?
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/MBO. Terms and conditions apply.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up!
crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato, coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret cane sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
That you roll your eyes at
Well, a lot of them. There are some lyrics that have actually that I kind of like. They as they got older, they got a little bit less committed to super silly. But a lot of the songs have.
But we've talked about this before, Jeff and Clint. You both are music first and lyrics second.
Yep.
And for me, I'm lyrics first, music second.
Yeah. So I like backwards down the number line. I like that song. Good
lyrics. And as a Fish fan, that's one of my
favorite songs.
It's you know what I mean? It's like that is taken directly from a letter written to him, by the way.
Oh, nice.
The lyrics of that are the words of it's like taken directly.
They're not his lyrics.
That's an interesting point, is that the two guys who are music first are the ones that like it, and the lyric first people aren't. But my point is,
that being said, I'm a mix of both, but I do not like prog rock. I've never liked prog rock. There's a half a dozen Yes songs that I can stand. King Crimson, out. And I can't remember, what was the other band you listed?
Zappa.
Just despise Zappa.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's really, there's a lot of...
The progenitors for this are all bad, for sure. And it's weird. I actually like the Grateful Dead better.
I was going to say, it's interesting that the Grateful Dead Fish is often hailed as sort of the successors of the Grateful Dead, because for me they could not be more different.
I totally agree with you, Rich. Yeah. Totally agree.
Musically, but that's
I mean the scene is similar. The scene that's is what, similar,
that, and that was the whole point. It was never musically that they were similar. It's that they carry the torch of the traveling circus, where people go from town to town, and there's an entire economy around. A Fish. Right.
You go on tour with Fish in the way that people went on tour with.
Some of the harmonies are similar, and some of the sort of keyboard bass work is similar. The Dead are much, much, much more folky and bluegrassy than mm-hmm. Fish is. But
I actually think
Fish are better musicians.
Oh, like, there's no doubt about that. But that's not necessarily good.
But I just think they composed. You tend to compose to the edge of your actual dexterity.
Right, but and that's so also not good.
Fish compositions go to a place that are much more calm. You like the fact that Pearl Jam composes to the edge of their dexterity. Take it easy. You like that Animal is a cool riff. That's hard to play. You do like that song.
I do like that, but that's not, I mean, these guys are like, they're pushing out in the boundaries in a lot of different ways, many of which are unpleasant to listen to on purpose.
Yeah, okay.
And that's a tough sell.
Tim, yeah,
I have a larger, though not inexhaustible, appetite for complicated music than you do. So,
Tim, do you know about the vacuum cleaner?
This is such a weird question.
Look at his ceiling. He definitely does not know about the vacuum cleaner.
You don't say a vacuum cleaner. You say the vacuum cleaner. So no, I don't.
So the story is this: John Fishman, drummer of Fish,
okay,
was at a party in like 1983,
okay,
and that somebody at the party was giving him crap about being a drummer or something. He said, "I can play any instrument in this house. I can play it. I can play anything in this house."
Okay.
And so the person was like, "Play that vacuum cleaner." So he picked it up and he's like, and he does this thing. And so for the next, still to this day, he plays the vacuum during.
They have a vacuum cleaner that they bring out with them?
It comes out. Yep. They have a lot of shtick. They have trampolines.
But they've gotten rid of most of that shit, haven't they? Like when Ben and I first saw the band in 1990, they got on the trampolines on song two, and we were just like, what is going on here? And I didn't dislike it then, but I'm glad they outgrew it. I mean, that's the other thing. Back to that like whimsy thing I'm trying to say, like they were positioning themselves as decidedly different in some ways from a rock band. Like they were trying to soften the whole thing. It's like four dudes on stage shredding. They were definitely trying to undercut that a little bit with silliness, the vacuum cleaner solo, fish playing in a dress, the trampolines, the secret language, like the little noises and stops, even like having the like the whole game hinge fake, you know, fake mythic story that was Trey's senior thesis that turns into a thing that they only play every 7 months for super fans. All of that built a myth that they could build a touring career around. But I do think they got I think 93, they outgrew that, and I'm glad they did. And then they became a much different, well, I mean, not necessarily better, but they became a much different band that created a kind of a second act for itself when it shed that stuff.
Yeah. That's exhibit A as far as like, oh, this isn't my band.
See, right? Because you expect a band to take itself really seriously. You expect a band to come on stage and be like,
well,
okay.
I expect a band to play instruments, not
no
vacuums.
One plays better. Nobody plays better instruments.
Nobody plays the vacuum better.
If you put Stone Gossard up against Trey,
okay,
and Stone Gossard is an incredible guitar player, but he couldn't even be in the same room understanding music theory.
Oh, just but that's... That's not the criteria. Nobody's like, you don't want to hear this solo. But first, I need to know, what do you know about the Mixolydian scale? Well, because that's what I'm most interested in hearing. No one cares. That's the freaking
problem. I disagree. I disagree with you.
Objection sustained. Moving on.
I disagree. I think that's what makes us all different. That's why not everyone goes to the same band. I mean, like... That's what brings me joy is the understanding of what they're doing musically. Like I don't like going to see, when I see Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, there's a band that are so on the next level musically. Each one of them is so deeply musical and heady and understands substitutions and all.
But Fish does it in a way.
Isn't jolting for me because I get the theory behind it and I appreciate the theory behind it, and I'm just saying the theory that Pearl Jam has is very diatonic, and Pearl Jam is one of my favorite bands of all time, but they're diatonically writing songs, and Fish is as its mission not diatonically writing songs, and that's the difference. So you're never going to like Fish no matter what I say, because their whole mission is based on something that you're never going to get off on.
I'm a huge fan of Coltrane's Giant Steps. Like, I'm not against composition for composition's sake, but there's something so self-conscious about it and so patched together about it that it just doesn't work for me at all.
That's so interesting to say that, because it doesn't feel that way to me.
There'll be portions of it where I'm like, oh, listen to this. And then they immediately transition into something that's unlistenable, unlikable. And that's part of their gig. And I guess
that
I sort of understand it. But part of the deal is that also I know for a fact that you two guys know a lot more about music and musical theory than I do. And that's completely fair. I've been to those concerts and there are not 21,000 music theory professionals at those concerts. Lord knows why they like it, but they do not like it because they're interested in hearing the changes of keys
Lord
and the changes
knows
of tempos.
Why they like it.
That's true.
So great.
I assume they like it because they're high.
That's a big part of it. I think the community that surrounds jam bands and Fish in particular is a very drug influenced culture, and hearing Fish
face off is
a much different experience than hearing Fish on a road trip in a car with your parents. It's a very, very different experience. And that's why hanging on every note is much easier when you're quite high. And there are times that I've been
sober,
and there's times that I've been tripping at Fish shows, and I enjoy them the same. But I think the majority of people enjoy Fish shows more when they're high.
Clint, how many times have you seen them?
Twice?
I've seen Fish probably 40 times, I would say.
Wow.
One of my favorite moments of seeing Clint was looking across the stage while we were playing a benefit concert, and Paige McConnell was playing keys, John Fishman was playing drums, Clint was singing lead and playing lead guitar.
Nice.
And the smile on Clint's face was about two feet wide. It was awesome.
So if we're going to call witnesses, I would call my 18-year-old self to the stand.
Right, right.
To go for bat for fish, because I'm a pop music baby. Justin Bieber was my number one on Spotify.
That's true. Yeah.
Right. That tells you something. I am all about the craft of songwriting. That's my entire life is based on the songwriting craft. And my 18-year-old self didn't understand prog rock, didn't understand anything but 1-4-5 and grunge. Right.
Yeah.
And so when I got turned on to weed for the first time is literally the same month that I heard Fish for the first time. And changed my life entirely. And I just remember that point in my life diving so deeply into that catalog that I became a lifelong fan in 2 months because I learned every nuance of every song that they had released up to that point. And then I haven't seen Fish live in 10 years. Oh. I don't think. So it's like, it's one of these things that I hear it on when we talk about is Fish listenable. I have Sirius Radio. I'm sure you guys do. It's one of my program stations. Do I go in the car and listen to Fish Radio all the time? No. But when I'm sick of a station and I'm flipping through, I will definitely get into a jam and ride it out till the rest of the thing. So for me, it's deeply listenable. I'm also a huge fan of their studio stuff, because in addition, I'm just a huge studio junkie in any way. And so the fact that they play no click track live, all in one room, four guys playing actual instruments together, and they have these super complex songs, but also these silly, like fun, whimsical, bluegrassy, weird songs. I just love that about it, that it's just a rock band. Four guys, no one ever sits in with the band. No one ever opens for the band. It's just, they do what they do and have done that since they started in 1983. They haven't changed. They have had no hit songs.
83? Holy smokes.
They turned 40 this year.
Wow.
And no record push, no anything. They haven't had anything. They've done it entirely on their own. And
they've had an ice cream.
They have had an ice cream.
I was going to say, I can't believe we've waited this long to talk about Fish Food, which is, in my estimation, the best ice cream flavor that has ever existed.
Wow.
So I prefer New York Super Fudge Chunk.
And I prefer Chunky Monkey, but I do love Fish Food. It's really good.
Fish Food all day long.
Strawberry cheesecake.
You've seen the Trey Anastasio Band quite a bit as well.
Yep.
What do you prefer, Tab or Fish?
I think it's
using
different...
Tab like an insider. Nicely done. I like
it's
that.
Definitely two different beasts altogether. I think it's incomparable. The Trey stuff is super. I mean, the horns just changed the whole thing for me. And
musically, the Jerry Garcia Band was better musically than the Grateful Dead. It was similar.
Similar
apples and oranges.
Yeah.
I think it's like Fuji apples and Red Delicious apples. I was going to say they're comparable. I just saw Trey like a month ago at the Greek, actually.
Same.
And, it's not the same thing, but it's,
it's different.
I don't think Ben would wander in and be like, who is this guy?
No.
He would identify pretty quickly.
No, but knowing the nuance of his playing and his writing style, it's definitely its own thing.
Trey's drummer in the Trey Anastasio Band is a guy named Russ Lawton, who's a guest frequently on the Age Old Question. And he and Clint have played in you've played in a band with Russ for
17 years.
Yeah. Wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Russ.
Great drummer.
Throw down.
Great drummer.
Has everyone said their piece?
Yes. You can make your judgment there, buddy.
No, wait. I'll say one more nice thing.
Yeah. Let's hear it.
So I do not like this genre. I think we're all clear on that. That being said, this is the second best band in the genre, and it's not even close.
Right.
Like, the gap between Fish and Widespread Panic
and Government
is
Mule,
freaking continent.
Definitely,
they're really like They're really, really good within this genre. I mean, it's like, you know how like comedians, like the first best comedian is a lot funnier than the second best comedian. Right. And the second best comedian is like the 10th best comedian. You're like, wow, I really wish I hadn't come.
There's a lot of Larry the Cable Guys on this list of champions.
Well, I don't know. We might have to go back and splice in some Fish music along the way. But at least let's get one Fish song in here, Jeff Simon.
Clint, you pick it. What do I play for him?
Something you've been grooving to.
Are we going to do... Did you put any studio cuts on that, or is it all live stuff?
I did. I put four shorts and six longs, because I knew Tim wouldn't listen past the first 5 minutes. So
I would say the studio version of Julius.
Interesting.
That was not among my choices. Here we go.
All right, let's hear it.
Danger, I've been told to expect it. I begin my descent down the cold granite steps. And who could have turned among those I can fight in? I think that I know what I haven't known yet. 'Cause a week is a month and an hour a day. When you're reaching, just pushes it further away now. With your past and your future precisely divided, am I at that moment? I haven't decided.
Don't take another step.
I haven't decided.
Don't take another step.
And stretching out into the sea, Aquitana, is that what the prophet told me he saw?
All right,
it's
Rich
like
Price.
Van Halen's Ice Cream Man. Starts out acoustic and goes electric.
Oh, yeah.
Rich Price, what was your take on that song? What'd you think?
I liked it. I mean, I didn't love it, but I liked it.
I was intrigued, and then Ben just ruined it for me.
How much longer is it? How much more does it go on?
That's a 4 minute song. It's not a long one.
Okay.
In concert, it's 12 and a half minutes, Ben. Yeah, yeah. It drives me crazy. He just goes over and over and over and over again at the end. But
yeah, right. Like, they can write a good song and they choose not to.
Oh my God, Tim. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the last word.
It's like, yeah, they're right there.
I feel like the judge and I are simpatico. Like, I'm going to stop talking.
I'm in. And
they
then all
know
sudden,
what good is and then walk away from good.
By the way, Jeff Simons has said almost the exact same thing about the Eagles.
Yes, I have.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that Ben's Fish is my Eagles. I just am like... I can't get anywhere except for the bass line on one of these nights, which is fantastic.
Makes you want to take off your shirt.
Joe Walsh.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Because it's not the bass player. Yeah. Joe Walsh is like, man, can I see that for a second? And records the one good thing on the Eagles catalog.
Joe Walsh from Cleveland. Yes, I've learned so
how it
much.
All comes together.
I've learned
brother,
so much on this
brother-in-law
podcast.
Of Ringo.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
Really?
They're That's both right. married. They're both married to a pair of sisters.
And I have my Sweetwater rep is both of their Sweetwater reps.
Is that right?
Yeah,
hilarious.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. Do you get your stuff? Do you get their stuff by accident ever from the Sweetwater rep? Or?
No, but I talk to him about it every time he tells. Did you talk to Ringo lately? Hey!
That's awesome,
Joe Walsh.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well. Clint and Rich, it's great to see you.
Gentlemen, so much fun.
Love the fact that you jumped on to
thanks for including us.
Fish. Yes.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'm going to go have some fish food.
Well, yeah. I'm actually going to run upstairs and vacuum. I'm feeling self-conscious now. All right.
Don't forget to try and play. By the way, will you take a picture of your face after you try and play the vacuum?
I will. Like just
give it a shot. Give it a shot, man.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks, guys.
Hey there, I'm DC. I host the Rock Podcast, Back to the Arena, The Interviews. It's about a 30-minute podcast
where I talk one-on-one with a band who has released new music. You can find us on all the best podcast sites like Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and more. If you're a rock fan like me, subscribe today to Back to the Arena, The Interview.
Electric Acid. Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement, inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on ElectricCast and any platform where you listen to your podcast.
ElectricCast.